calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
All righty, what are they looking for? What are they? I am convinced. Well, reasonably convinced. I mean, based on what Richard Nixon did, that he's been spying on the Democrats. Greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Here we have George W. Bush now theoretically backpedaling. He does have a backstop in the national security letters, little ditty, you know, courtesy of the Patriot Act. But Bush has said now, well, okay, we're going to go to the FISA courts. Now, this after he had told us, oh, you shouldn't have to go to the FISA courts. You know, going to the FISA courts, it's too much of a burden. It's too difficult. How can you make us do that? I mean, that's just you know, wrong. It's too much. It's going to put Americans in danger, don't you know? And then, well, now then it becomes no big deal. Now, what people are saying, what the talking heads are saying, and what a lot of Democrats are saying, is that the reason that George Bush has said, okay, you know, we'll go ahead and we'll allow the FISA courts to oversee wiretapping in the United States, and going in and out of the United States, but also in the United States, is because there was an election, because the Democrats won the election and they're going to hold him accountable. And that it's just a coincidence that he made the announcement yesterday. And today, Alberto Gonzalez is testifying. In fact, as we speak, I believe, unless he just finished, David is tracking this down as we speak right now, that he's testifying before Congress. In fact, I called Pat Leahy's office this morning. And, I mean, you know, I've got no juice with them. I'm not a constituent. I don't live in Vermont any longer. But like you, I'm a citizen of the United States. I didn't identify myself as a talk show host or even as somebody who knows or has met Senator Leahy, although all of that is true. I just called and I said, hi, would you, you know, the person who answered, I said, hi, I'm just calling to ask you to please ask Senator Leahy to please ask Mr. Gonzalez or other members of the administration if at any time they used their warrantless wiretapping to tap Democrats for partisan purposes. This is where I'm going with this whole thing. Keep in mind, and I just, you know, I don't get it why this is never discussed by the talking heads on TV and all this, you know, everything else. This startling and very real, what do you say, real reality? That one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was all about the fact that he was using the CIA and the FBI to and then ultimately the plumbers, you know, his own little off-the-shelf operation, to spy on Democrats. And that's one of the reasons that they passed FISA in the first place, was to say, sorry, you can't spy on Democrats anymore. And then Bush comes along and he says, I can spy on anybody I want. I don't have to have a court look it over. Now, what might a court turn down? It might turn down, hey, I'd like to know what Senator Kennedy is saying to Senator Leahy on the phone. So anyhow, my point earlier, I said, you know, everybody's saying that Bush is giving up on not going with the FISA. In other words, he's caving in there. It's being called, you know, whatnot. Now, actually, it's not. It's highly conditional. But they're all saying, Bush is going to go along with it. He's going to follow the law now. Isn't that noble of him? He's going to stop committing felonies on a daily basis because of the elections, because the Democrats are in charge. I think, and those of you who listen to this program regularly know that I am not the extreme end of the conspiracy theory spectrum. I'm basing this on simply having watched another Republican president. I think that, yes, He is doing it because of the elections, but not because he's concerned about the power the Democrats have. He's doing it because he doesn't need to spy on Democrats anymore. The election's over. Makes perfect sense to me. I mean, you know, could it be? Yeah, I think so. I really do. I. So, this, in today's Wall Street Journal, the Bush administration said it would discontinue warrantless wiretaps of calls between the U.S. and overseas, a reversal that could help it dodge a confrontation with the Democratic majority in Congress and head off chances a federal appeals court will find the program illegal. Well, a federal court has already found the program illegal. Judge Anna Diggs Taylor in Detroit back, you know, half a year ago came out and said, this is not only illegal, it's unconstitutional. This guy is violating his oath of office. Now, my words, not hers. But her words were quite strong, as you'll recall at that time. So, what's going on here? Is Bush now and Gonzalez, are they saying, okay, we'll go along in the hopes that A, the Democrats won't investigate any further? Are we going to see a scenario like we saw with the Shah of Iran? Excuse me, Iran-Contra deal. Where Congress, remember that famous clip of Ronald Reagan saying, my heart tells me that I would not exchange arms for hostages, but the facts say otherwise. Remember that? When he said that, there were no hostages. He said that before the next set of hostages had been taken, and that was in Lebanon. The only hostages he could have been referring to were the hostages being held that brought down the Carter presidency. You know, unless I've just, like, hugely missed something in history, and I it's possible, maybe I have. I mean, you know, give me a call and let me know, but I don't think so. So here's Reagan basically admitting that they're cutting a deal with Iran. And why did they do that? Obviously, they did that so that Iran would hold the hostages. Now, he tried to spin it like, you know, gee, we give them weapons so that they'd let go of the hostages at the very moment that I put my hand on the Bible. But how could you have been negotiating with them when you weren't president? What, you negotiate as a political candidate? So anyhow, there's you know, Reagan doing that. And when Congress decided to investigate it, Congress put a limit on itself and said, And I'm guessing, again, the politics of the time were kind of tough. I'm guessing that one of the reasons why Congress did this is because, you know, they figured a small investigation is better than no investigation, and they didn't have a filibuster. The Democrats didn't have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. But they put a limit on their own investigation and said, we may not investigate what the Reagan campaign did. We can't look back before that election. And so it never got investigated. To this day, there have been several books written about it. Gary Sick, Barbara Honegger. Barbara Honegger worked in the White House, in the Reagan White House. Back cover of the book, her and Reagan and Bush shaking hands. And she says, oh, yeah, they made a deal with the Iranians. So is this the same kind of thing? Is this Bush coming out? Now it's Bush Jr., then it was Bush Sr., is this Bush coming out and saying to the Democrats and saying to Congress, if you won't investigate the actual illegal actions that took place while he was spying on Americans illegally, then he'll stop doing it now? Sort of like, you know, Reagan apologized and Congress said, oh, okay, we'll cut you some slack. Is it something like that? Are the Democrats going to ask the hard questions? I am waiting. And I hope that if you are represented by a member of the Senate or the House before whom any kind of testimony about this warrantless wiretap program, this illegal warrantless wiretap program that goes forward, that you will call them. The toll-free number for Congress, 866, at least the number I called this morning, 220-0044. 866-220-0044. And just ask the simple question. I want to know, if when Bush was doing his wireless warrantless wiretapping, if at any time during that process any of those wiretaps ended up on Democrats, you know, was this, are we looking at plumbers all over again? Because I'd say the odds are probably somewhere between 50-50 and 70-30 in favor of it. And I really don't think that's a paranoid position. We'll take your calls and thoughts on this right after the break. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Looking down the nose of what people say. Business words and words okay. It's what you do and not what you say. If you're not part of the future, then get out of the way. Come on, baby, take a ride with me. And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program. Congresswoman Heather Wilson, the Republican and notorious right-winger from New Mexico, saying, oddly enough, saying that the Justice Department's new approach to warrantless domestic spying relies on a, this is a quote from the New York Times today, relies on a blanket programmatic approval of the president's surveillance program rather than approval of individual warrants. In other words, a Republican concerned about civil liberties. She says administration officials have convinced a single judge in a secret session in a non-adversarial session to issue a court order to cover the president's terrorism surveillance program. In other words, it's not even the old FISA law where you've got to go and say, hey, we want to wiretap Ralph. And they say, okay, that's fine. It looks like Ralph might be a bad guy. Or you've got 3 days, you know, 3 days after you've wiretapped him. Sometime in those 3 days, let us know. Plus, we've got the national security letter, so they can wiretap you anytime they want. And they're issuing these things, you know, and of course, you know, George Bush.
There's a process that goes on inside the Justice Department, and I presume about leaks. I presume that process is moving forward. My personal opinion is it was a shameful act for someone to disclose this very important program in time of war.
Yeah, we're spying on Democrats. How dare they?
The fact that we're discussing this program.
The spy program.
Is helping the enemy.
Yeah, it's helping Ted Kennedy.
You got to understand, and I hope the American people understand, there's still an enemy that would like to strike the United States of America, and they're very dangerous.
And therefore, I've got to wiretap every Democrat in this country, don't you know?
But it is a shameful act by somebody who has got secrets of the United States government and feels like they need to disclose them publicly.
Yeah, and I can't go to a court because I've got my own secrets, you see.
Quick to detect and prevent. We use FISA still. You're referring to the FISA court in your question. Of course we use FISA. But FISA's is for long-term monitoring. What is needed in order to protect the American people is the ability to move quickly to detect.
Yeah, well, it's just talking through, well, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Dean in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Dean.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm very good. I'm calling. I hope my signal holds up. But I'm calling to talk about the premise of your show so far is very good. Right now we're making assumptions. So I would like to say not to just overly simplify things into currently spying on Democrats. Mm-hmm. Because at the time that these occurrences were going on, the Republicans were strong and with public support, and they were safely embedded in the middle of their term in office. And I would like to posit that also, since they're always concerned about their financial and corporate backup, that and they're always involved with the negotiations and stuff like that, that it's possible that they were using those wiretaps to listen to people, high-ranking CEOs or whoever in corporations. And I think it's imperative that these investigations continue and that they have to have some kind of a list presented at some time.
Yeah, in other words, there might have been a Jack Abramoff kind of component of this. That's an interesting point, Dean. You know, Brian Baird, Congressman Brian Baird of Washington, tried during the last legislative session, I'm assuming he's going to take a shot at it again, to pass legislation saying that what was going on out of Tom DeLay's office is illegal. It is right at the moment, what Martha Stewart was alleged to have done, which is trading on inside information, is against the law if you're an individual. If you're anybody except somebody who works in the office of a member of Congress. You get that? Because in Tom DeLay's office, and apparently this was in a whole bunch of Republicans' offices, and when Brian Baird had been in the Congress, in the House of Representatives for a decade, I believe, and he didn't even know this was going on. I mean, this is how clueless the Democrats were. I don't mean clueless in a negative way. I mean that the Republicans were doing these crimes, and the Democrats had no idea. But apparently this was happening in a lot of Republican offices, where if they were working on a piece of legislation that they knew was going to help a particular industry, you know, a particular company was going to get a big contract to build a bridge to nowhere, or somebody was going to get some no-bid contract, or whatever, if they knew that, then you had congressional staffers who were sitting in the offices of members of Congress going on these online trading sites and buying the stock of these companies. And then the next day, the legislation hits the floor of Congress and boom, you know, and gets passed. And boom, the stock of that company goes up 5, 10, 20%. And then they sell it that day. And they, you know, these guys are making piles of money. It's still legal. It's probably still happening. So maybe, you know, Dean, maybe it wasn't entirely political, all this spying. Maybe there was some political dimension to it as well. I don't know. But it's the whole thing stinks, in my opinion. It stinks. Anyhow, back with your calls after this. And, of course, there's a lot more going on today in the news. 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Truth in Broadcasting for a Change in America. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where progressives fiendishly plot for clean government. That's a start. By the way, the 25th and 26th, next Thursday and Friday, I'll be in Washington, D.C., broadcasting from the Radio Row at the Mayflower Hotel. And the night, Thursday night at 6 o'clock, at the Mayflower Hotel next Thursday, one week from tonight, Thursday the 25th, I'll be giving a talk on my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, and signing books. It's open to the public. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, particularly if you're planning on coming to town for the big protest on Saturday, drop by Thursday night at the Mayflower Hotel, 6 p.m., and say hi. There's another dimension to this. Back on topic. Is Bush trying to make sure that he doesn't get prosecuted for high crimes and misdemeanors? At the same time, in my opinion, that he's trying to manipulate Congress and public opinion. You'll remember he first started out, trying the big lie routine, right? He first tried to bluff his way through it, lied.
Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland, because we value the Constitution.
Okay, so then that didn't work. You know, the New York Times then, Eric Lichtblau, and I forget the guy who wrote it with him, wrote this piece in the New York Times and said, hey, you know, he's wiretapping us without warrants. He lied. So then he puts a guy in charge of the NSA who doesn't understand what the Fourth Amendment says. The Fourth Amendment says that you're to be secure in your persons and papers. And, well, here's the interview, very quickly.
Jonathan Lande with Knight Ridder. I'd like to stay on the same issue, and that has to do with the standard by which you use to target your wiretaps. I'm no lawyer, but my understanding is that the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution specifies that you must have probable cause.
And it does. It says no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause affirmed by oath. I don't have it in front of me. I'm doing this from memory. Of at least one witness and particularly describing the person and place and things to be seized or to be searched. And he's right. You have to have probable cause. You have to demonstrate that probably a crime has been committed. So anyhow, he continues with his question, and obviously General Michael Hayden doesn't get
to be able to do a search that does not violate an American's right against unlawful seizures and searches and seizures.
Fourth Amendment actually protects all of us against unreasonable search and seizure.
But
that's what it says.
The measure is probable cause, I believe.
The amendment says unreasonable search and seizure.
But does it not say probable cause?
No.
You get that? Does it not say probable cause? No. What? What? So he puts an absolutely incompetent guy who has no idea what the Constitution says in charge of listening in on us. Oh, my. Well, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. David in Mountain View, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, David.
Hey, I just wanted to say that on this point, the kind of power politics that the Bush administration practices requires you to have dirt on your friends as well. It's
kind of
the J. Edgar Hoover model.
That's exactly right. I was just going to say, just like J. Edgar Hoover did, he had dirt on everybody. And you're probably right. Bush was probably spying on Republicans just as much as he was Democrats. Well said, David. Thank you. Vic in Cedar Creek, Texas. Hey, Vic.
It's almost funny, isn't it?
In a way. I mean, it's tragic funny, yeah.
Well, in January 2006, you know, the Congressional Research Service issued a 44-page memorandum on whether the president had authority to conduct wireless electronic surveillance and for you and me in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
You mean warrantless?
Yeah, warrantless searches.
Yeah.
And it talked specifically of electronic and other means. And it repeatedly cited a case from 1972. It was the United States versus the United States District Court. Are you familiar with that one?
I am, and that case was before the FISA law was enacted. And these guys kept trying to say, hey, we can do this, because back in 72 you could do it. Well, in 72 there wasn't a law against it. Now there is a law against it, and Bush has broken that law. Good point, Vic.
In 72 it said the Fourth Amendment freedoms cannot be properly guaranteed if discretion of the executive branch, the government can spy.
Oh, that's interesting. So even before the FISA law, it was saying that.
The government came back and argued, the fact that this is special circumstances, da 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 da, and it's still upheld that it would violate the Fourth Amendment rights of people because, you know, you could pop in on some Democratic candidate, and then what would you do?
Sure.
Would you have to transcribe that information and turn it over to somebody?
Yeah. Good point. Vic, thank you very much for making that. Jim in Maple Valley, Washington. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Good. I've been listening to your conversation there, and I think that the reason the wiretapping has been set aside is it's a stay-out-of-jail card that the Bush administration is
Yeah, that's my original point. But he doesn't want his crimes to come out, and he figures he can play it the exact same way his father did with the deal that they cut with Iran and back in 1980 to hold the hostages to take down Jimmy Carter. I agree with you, Jim. Joyce in San Francisco. Hey, Joyce.
Hi, Tom. In addition to getting blackmailable items on Dems, Republicans, journalists, to know who might have some inside information, 9/11, whatever other things that they may be involved in.
Sure, so they're covering their backside for some of their other crimes.
Exactly.
In other words, yeah, okay, yeah. Good point, Joyce. Vern in Palm Springs, California. Hey, Vern.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, what's up?
Good, I was just listening to the conversations with your people you've been talking to, and I just want to put in my opinion that I think you're 100% right on this, and I want to know where the Democrats are. Why aren't they bringing this to light?
I agree. I mean, look at the fact that Arlen Specter, who's the senator from Utah, rats. Anyhow, out of his office, the senator from Utah, the Republican senator from Utah, Orrin Hatch, out of Orrin Hatch's office, you had one of his, I believe it was his chief of staff, if not it was one of his staffers, had hacked into Ted Kennedy's computer and several other Democrats' computers, but I remember specifically Kennedy's, and for a year and a half, during the first 2 years of the Bush administration, for a year and a half, these guys out of Orrin Hatch's office were hacking into the Democrats' computers and looking at their internal memos and emails about their strategies for confirmation of judges and using it against them and preempting them in the press and playing all kinds of dirty tricks. And when this finally got outed, the Senate did not investigate this. Orrin Hatch fired the guy, but that was it. That was it. There has been no investigation of it. I mean, here you've got Republicans spying on Democrats, and we've got a Republican president who's defending a spy program, and what, we're supposed to think that it's just a, you know, just, he's a good guy, he's just looking for terrorists. I don't buy it.
Tom, this is outrageous. I mean, where are the Democrats? Where's the Justice Department? What is going on?
I agree. I absolutely agree with you, Vern. Thanks for the call. I'll be back to your calls in just a second, but I got to share also Dianne Feinstein. Not only are they trying to prevent an investigation by the Senate, they're throwing out the Justice Department lawyers some of whom have actually prosecuted Republicans, like the woman in California who prosecuted Duke Cunningham. She just got fired. Dianne Feinstein actually tells it better than I can. She's
recently, it came to my attention that the Department of Justice has asked several United States attorneys from around the country to resign their positions, some by the end of this month, prior to the end of their terms, and not based on any allegation of misconduct. In other words, they are forced resignations.
You get that? In other words, anybody who could prosecute us, we're going to get out of here. And who are we going to replace them with? Republican toadies.
I've also heard that the United States that the Attorney General plans to appoint interim replacements and potentially avoid Senate confirmation.
Now, typically, if you're going to have a federal prosecutor, they have to be confirmed by the Senate. In other words, the Senate gets to figure out if they may have an interest in prosecuting Republicans. But no, the Patriot Act took care of that, and nobody was paying attention, as Feinstein points out.
By leaving an interim U.S. attorney in place for the remainder of the Bush administration. Now, how does this all happen? The department sought and essentially was given new authority under a little known provision in the Patriot Act to appoint interim appointments who are not subject to Senate confirmation and who could remain in place for the remainder of the Bush administration.
You get that? So the new people prosecuting, Mark driving in Virginia. Hey, Mark, you think I'm crazy?
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, man, I just wanted to say, you know, I've been listening to your show here for about an hour or so now, maybe 40 minutes. But you've been talking about the wiretapping. Why don't you and your left-wing buddies just go out, rent yourself a couple of big jumbo jets, put terrorists on them, and guide them to key positions that they can crash the planes into? You guys don't realize that this thing...
To defend what freedoms, Mark? To defend what freedoms? I mean, how much freedom are you willing to give away to make George Bush the imperial president, Mark? That's got to be the most unpatriotic. How can you call yourself an American if you don't believe in the Constitution? If you don't believe in the standards that this country was founded on? If you don't... We'll be back after this. 45 minutes past the hour. Place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Mark, driving in Virginia. Mark, I cut you off there. We had to take a break, but also thank you for calling back.
I call it cutting and running. Hey, first things first,
okay.
don't ask about my patriotic duty because I served in the military. What branch have you ever served in?
Mark,
that's
the
first
fact...
thing.
I am not questioning your patriotism. I'm questioning your intelligence. The Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Now, the President of the United States broke that law, broke the laws that are based on that, and in the opinion of a federal court, violated the Constitution. And you do not think that he should be held to account for that.
And the president is supposed to protect us against enemies foreign and domestic.
No, it does not say that. I'm sorry, Mark. I'm sorry, Mark. I don't. You're not quoting the Constitution. The president's. Go ahead.
I didn't interrupt you when you were speaking.
All right, go ahead. Make your point.
So, if you have nothing to hide, if you are not planning on doing any wrong to the United States, what reason do you what do you have to hide? What do you care if they're listening on your wife's conversations about baking a pie or something like that? Who cares? You know, it's like a drug dealer. You know, he's all against, you know, search and seizures because he's got something to hide.
Only the guilty have to worry about.
Exactly. You're worried about it. So what are you worried about?
Well, Mark, you make a very persuasive case. You know, I think that we should just let the government listen in on everything we all do.
I don't care. You know, I mean, they.
I'm sure you wouldn't. You would have no problem with Teddy Kennedy listening in on what's happening in your bedroom.
No, I don't. I don't care. If they want to put a microphone in there, you know, I mean.
Okay, well, that's fine. I understand your perspective, and I realize that there are some Americans who share it, who don't believe in freedom and who don't believe in liberty from government, and who don't think that government can ever do wrong. I can tell you the history of the world tells us that governments can do wrong, and that governments do overreach, and that power does corrupt, and that and the whole point of the Constitution, literally the entire point of the Constitution, is to limit government power. Nowhere in the Constitution does it grant us rights. What it does is it limits the power of the government from taking our rights. And specifically to your statement about the president, just for your information, Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 8 of the Constitution describes the job of the president and the oath he shall take. He shall say, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Period. End of sentence. Full stop.
Which also reads, keep reading further on, I will protect my country against foreign and domestic enemies.
It's not there. It's not there.
You have tunnel vision, and you got to take a step
back. I'm sitting here with the Constitution in my hand, Mark. It's not there.
Okay,
that's the end of the paragraph.
You ain't got to have an ulcer over it. We're just going to agree to disagree, sir.
All righty.
It's been nice talking to you.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you for your service to your country.
Right.
Michael in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Michael.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Well,
I'll make a little argument against old Mark's statement there on the wiretapping here. You know, it is totally beside the point of the wiretapping because, you know, it's against your right for anybody to invade that privacy, whether your wife's baking a pie or whether she's planning to.
But Mark doesn't care about his privacy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Whether it doesn't matter.
We should probably all go over to his house with a camera, you know, it's.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But if a terrorist or anybody wanted to plot against us, they know what kind of means we're doing to tap them. They know we're wiretapping. They know how we're checking them out. So you could easily plan any type of thing just by having a conversation about something that's irrelevant, about your goldfish, your dog, you know, what color its fur is. And by that coded message and that little paragraph of a sentence, you've just denoted to your friend where you're going to hit, by what.
No, I agree with you, Michael. It's a very difficult business, but nonetheless, it's one that I do think that we need to have spy agencies. We do need to be engaging in intelligence gathering. But you're right. It's complex. Jeff in Denver, thank you for the call. Jeff in Denver, Colorado.
Well, responding to Mark's statement there, if you've got nothing to hide, why, what's wrong with listening? Well, what does Dick Cheney have to hide then? How come we don't get to listen to Dick Cheney?
Why did he go to the Supreme Court to keep secret who he was meeting with in the Energy Task Force meetings?
Yes, if Bush, if Cheney, if all those people have nothing to hide.
Why did he wait 24 hours to call, you know, to talk with the police after he shot his friend in the face?
Yeah, if there's anybody we should be able to listen to, it's those who supposedly represent us.
I agree. Well said, Jeff. Thank you. Keith in Huntington, California. Just a few seconds left here, Keith.
Hey, how's it going? Just a quick comment for Mark there. If I say love it and leave it, if he doesn't love the country and constitution that our forefathers died for, well, he should go to a country like Saudi Arabia or some banana republic. you know, republic that apparently he'd be very comfortable there.
Yeah, well, in Saudi Arabia, they definitely do keep track of what you're doing. Dixie in Seattle.
Yeah, that man, as far as I'm concerned, is a yellow-bellied coward. I don't care whether he served his country or not. Anybody that wants to give up their doggone basic freedoms for what they view as a little bit of security is ridiculous.
To paraphrase Ben Franklin.
And right. they need to go in and send Hollywood in there and make a few sex films in his bedroom and then...
Okay, Dixie, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. Well, I think, I don't know, maybe, you know, hopefully Mark will wake up one of these days. And, you know, God bless you, Mark, for listening and for having the courage to call in. It's not very often that conservatives are even willing to call. It's just amazing to me how, you know, you just kind of hide out. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. What's up with stem cells? The one piece, the one thing that Bush vetoed was stem cells last time around. We'll talk about this with a Republican candidate for president right after the break.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, 10:05 on the West Coast. What is that, 1:05 on the East Coast? Thursday, what is today, actually? It's the 18th of January. Glad to have you back with us. John Cox is on the line with us, the first declared Republican presidential candidate. Cox2008.com, his website. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be with you again.
Great to have you back with us. I wanted to talk with you originally, and we had scheduled this, and I don't want to not get to it, this thing about embryonic stem cells and the whole debate, and, you know, it's before Congress and
sure.
part of that. But before I do that, I've got a bunch of callers we're going to get to and toward the bottom of the hour here and have been in the last hour talking about this issue of Bush's warrantless wiretaps. I'm just curious, as a Republican and a presidential candidate, what's your position on whether the president should have the right to listen in on our phone call conversations without going before a court and first proving that there's probable cause we've committed a crime?
I do believe in the Fourth Amendment. I do believe in the privacy of Americans and their phone calls, and I think if it can be arranged to have a court review the request for wiretaps of this sort, I think that's important. We value our freedom in this country, and so I would part company with anybody who says that we need to do this without a warrant.
So you part company with the Bush administration on this
I
issue?
Do. Yeah. I part company with them on immigration. I part company with them on spending and debt. I part company on the surge. I want to get that oil flowing in Iraq, and you and I have talked about that many times. You notice my potential opponents, Gingrich and Giuliani, had a piece in the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal on Friday saying, put Iraqis to work, which I've been talking about for 9 months now.
Instead of getting the oil flowing in Iraq, shouldn't we be spending more time and energy and thought on getting the United States free of dependence on oil from Iraq?
I think that's a real good plan for the future.
Okay.
It's not
going
to happen tomorrow, though, Tom. That's the problem. And,
yeah.
And you know what? The issue is that the Iraqis ought to be paying for this reconstruction. We wouldn't. We shouldn't. The American taxpayers.
Oh, come on, John. We blew up their country. We blew up their country.
Well, they didn't blow up all the oil wells. They got oil wells that should be pumping 5 million barrels a day, and they're only pumping 1.5 million. Well, let them pump their oil and put people to work and get some prosperity and show the people of Iran and North Korea and a lot of other countries that prosperity is what the U.S. stands for, not the point of a gun.
Well, your Republican colleagues are certainly wiping out prosperity for the American middle class, but let's...
Well, that's a different story. And,
yeah, it is.
I might agree with you. Why don't we get rid of the tax system in this country, which is a huge burden on the middle class?
Well, I want to get back to this press release that I just got from you. You said the entire embryonic stem cell debate is a conspiracy by the liberal media and liberal elites to have human embryos declared non-persons so they can further debase life and promote their pro-abortion, clone, and kill agenda, says Cox. An embryo that has not been implanted in the womb is not a person, John.
Well, but it has a
In fact, I would argue even once it's implanted, it's not
a
person.
As a matter of fact, Tom, have you heard about the snowflake babies, the babies who are born from embryos that are basically tossed aside? I think we ought to reexamine people who just create embryos and throw them in a...
John, have you heard of sperm banks?
I'm sure I've heard of sperm banks, but a sperm is not a person. It needs an egg for that, Tom.
That's right. And an embryo is not a person. It needs... And an embryo is not a person. It needs a womb to be implanted into.
Well, you know what we ought to do, Tom? Let's cut through this debate. And we just found out that Harvard researchers have discovered that you can get great stem cells better than embryonic from placentas and amniotic fluid. That's what this is all about. We should do better research, and we should get pharmaceutical companies the wherewithal by getting rid of the income tax and streamlining regulation, get them into, you know, truly stem cell research that will cure these diseases. This embryonic debate is all about having embryos declared non-persons, because if you can win that debate, the abortion issue goes away. If everybody
Do you think, John, that the in vitro fertilization clinics around the United States, who on an average year flush around 100 to 150,000 embryos down the drain, literally down the sink, should be prosecuted for murder?
No, but I think we.
But they just did away with 150,000 people.
Tom, that's extreme. But let's examine what we do. That's all I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that when you start toying with things like this, I mean, did you read about the woman who is starting an embryo bank in Texas, I believe it is, that people can go in there and order the kind of baby they want? If you want a baby that's born of two professors or maybe Shaquille O'Neal.
Sperm banks have been doing that for three decades.
Is that what we want to do, Tom? No, is that
well? That's a whole other argument, John, and I'm frankly ambivalent about it.
It's part of the same, Tom. It's do we play with life or do we try to enhance life?
Well, we've always played with life. I mean, go back to Gregor Mendel,
yeah,
you know.
Frankenstein, right? No.
I'm talking about hybridization. I mean, we've been playing with life forever. And that's, by the way, the way of nature. It's called, survival of the fittest and evolution.
Okay, but is your goal, Tom, to create a master race of people who all look the same, or is it your goal to just cure diseases? You got to basically say, what are you intending to do with this? And
I don't recall bringing up master races, John.
I think that's the natural outgrowth. If you're selling embryos of two that are composed of two professors, sperm and egg, I think you're on the verge of something that. Maybe that's something that society ought to think about before it goes that far, really.
Well, I don't disagree with you that there is an ethical discussion here that we should be having in society.
Yeah,
and frankly, I think with regard to the whole abortion issue, that we need to be revisiting the issue of, at what point is a fetus viable and therefore, the state's interests supersede that of the mother's and all that kind of thing. We haven't had that discussion. Instead, it's this discussion about life begins at birth or not. And nobody's talking about that gray area that we were visiting in the 1970s. And I think that there should be some discussion about that. But to take your suggestion that having an embryo bank where you can get a sperm and egg from two professors is part of trying to create a master race, the flip and you say that's not an extreme.
I'm not saying that.
The flip side of that is that these IVF clinics that are flushing embryos down the sink should be prosecuted for murder.
I didn't say that, and I didn't say that we were doing a master race, Tom. You're putting words in my mouth. All I said is that we don't want to get into this ethical quandary where we've got people deciding how they select a baby's characteristics.
I think we need to have these ethical debates and discussions.
Well, I do agree that we should have the debate. I think we want to be very careful about going down that road, and that's what I've always said. So, that's the big issue here is getting into this ethical debate. And we ought to start talking about how we're going to respect individuality and life of the individual. And that's the thing I worry about that we get.
So if we have this is really interesting, John. We're talking with John Cox, Cox2008.com, the first declared Republican presidential candidate. John, this is really interesting to me. You're suggesting that we should not. That people should not be able to, that IVF clinics should not be able to offer to to infertile couples an opportunity to have a fertilized ovum that comes from donors that they know something about.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Now,
you think everything should be random?
All I said is that I think it's an ethical discussion we ought to have about whether somebody should be able to go to a fertilization clinic, as you call it, and say, gee, I want a professor to be married up with Shaquille O'Neal's sperm, and let's see if we can create a baby that's a real smart basketball player. I just don't think that that's something that we want to go down.
So the other end of that is that they have to go in and they say, take some random egg and some random sperm, throw them together and make me pregnant. That's what you want?
I'm not sure I want that either, but that's actually what happens today. I think.
Well, actually, it's not. Actually, people
take place.
Actually, that's not what happens in IVF in those kinds of clinics. Typically, at the very least, people are choosing race, and they're screening people for diseases, hereditary diseases and things like that. You don't think that should be done?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not a medical ethicist, Tom, so I'm just not going to offer my opinion as to what.
But the opinion, John,
I'm not running for Pope. I'm not running for.
No, you're running for president. And if you're saying
that
an unimplanted embryo is a person, that is a medical ethical statement.
Yeah, but it's not something I'm going to decide by myself. I mean, it's going to be something that I'm going to talk to the American people about and try to get some kind of an idea as to what the American people believe in this whole debate. And I think that's what a leader does, Tom. A leader doesn't just impose his own views on everybody else.
That's a good discussion, John. I appreciate your coming on and mixing it up with me.
I appreciate it, too.
John Cox, Cox2008.com, his website, if you want to learn more about John Cox's candidacy as the first declared Republican candidate for president. John, have a great day. Good talking
Thank you, Tom.
Bye. 16 minutes past the hour.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman radio program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Jonathan Marino is with us. He is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He is the David and Lynn Silfen University Professor and Professor of Medical Ethics and the History and Sociology of Science at the University of Pennsylvania and past president of the American Society for Bioethics and Humanities. And for the folks who want to continue to carry on with some of the conversations we've been having up to this point and also get back to the issue of Bush's spying, we will be doing that shortly. But first I wanted to bring Jonathan on. Jonathan, AmericanProgress.org, by the way, the website. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for being with us. Monday is the 34th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Today, or this week, we have Congress revisiting the possibility of pushing through legislation that Bush may or may not once again veto for stem cell research.
Right.
I just had a debate with Mr. Cox, the first declared Republican presidential candidate, who is suggesting that an unimplanted embryo is a person, which raises all kinds of questions, like do we start prosecuting criminally in vitro fertilization clinics that dispose of them?
We better start prosecuting the women who have. Who will lose their pregnancies naturally? All those embryos, I guess.
Oh, that's right. About half of all
pregnancies are expelled. Yeah. Expelled fertilized eggs are expelled by the female body. Typically, about 50% of the time, we better start having funerals for those embryos.
Yeah. Oh boy. See, this is the what's in the news today is that they've found that there are stem cells, apparently, nice, juicy, viable stem cells in amniotic fluid that you could draw out the same way you do amniocentesis. Just pop a needle into a pregnant woman's stomach and pull out a little of that fluid, and bingo, you've got stem cells.
Well, the only people who are not saying, it seems, that this is a potential substitute for embryonic stem cells is the scientists who actually did the experiment.
Uh-huh.
So we've been down this road before, Tom. If you remember, a couple of years ago, people were talking excitedly who were opposed to embryonic stem cell research about so-called adult stem cells, the ones that you and I have floating around in our bodies.
Right. That do some coming out of bone marrow.
Right. They do some repair work on closely related tissues. Then we heard about other ways of getting embryonic stem cells out of embryos without killing them. Now we're hearing about amniotic fluid as a way of getting stem cells that are as potent as embryonic stem cells. But what you're hearing, we're hearing that from is the pundits, not from the scientists. So what I'm saying is, let's let the scientists do the science. The individual who led that study, Dr. Atala at Wake Forest, is on record as saying this is not a reason to stop embryonic stem cell research. We have no reason for believing that there's anything that's going to be more valuable for certain purposes than embryonic stem cells. But as in the case of the abortion debate, everything seems in this country these days to get sucked into the same quagmire, the same alleged moral quagmire. And instead of letting the biologists go and do their work, what we're seeing is attempts by both sides to overinterpret the results of a scientific article.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Marino, AmericanProgress.org, the website, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and bioethicist. Isn't it time it's for us to revisit the debate that we had in the 1970s that led to Roe v. Wade, and actually the debate that we had in the 60s, I would argue. It seems that all discussion of abortion and stem cell, which is, you know, an outgrowth of that debate, breaks down to life begins at conception or it doesn't. And there's no discussion any longer about viability. At what point is a fetus viable? And that was, you know, one of the fulcrum points, was it not, of Roe v. Wade?
It was. But I think what's happened since then is that this thing has become so politicized, again, on both sides. That it's very hard to have a more nuanced discussion of when a developing embryo and fetus begins to acquire gradually more and more characteristics that we associate with the interests of and rights of people. And unfortunately, in this overheated environment, it's so difficult to have an honest conversation.
But it seems that there's a very small percentage of people who really see the world in black and white, and they're the ones who are
driving it.
Yeah, they're the loudest voices, the small number of judges, and the broad spectrum of perceivers here across society,
right.
the folks who see the shades of gray. They're not speaking out, and maybe it's because they're not the judges, but how do we get, you know, them to speak out?
If I knew that, I'd be somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think that is the $64,000 question of this whole period we're in. It's interesting that in Europe, I often say to my students in Europe, if you tried to get a rally on one side or the other of the abortion issue on a college campus, you'd get nobody showing up.
Yeah.
Here you get thousands of people on each side.
Yeah,
whereas if you tried to get a rally on genetically modified food, even at a place like Penn, you'd hardly get anybody showing up. But in Europe, everybody would come.
Yeah.
So it's a question of political culture. I think we're just going to have to cycle through this thing and hang on.
And media culture as well.
Right.
You know, what the media is choosing to highlight. Jonathan Marino, AmericanProgress.org. Dr. Marino, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Good talking with you.
Bye-bye.
27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh because he'll want some. Welcome back to the program. We're tuning in, and it's just as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker named Jeff Gannon. I'm Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Before we go to the phone lines, let's just take a real quick look at what's going on with the ongoing occupation, U.S. occupation of Iraq. I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance. There are people on the fire. There are children at the cannon. And there is blood on the wire. Following our security developments in Iraq as of 10:30 Greenwich Mean Time on Thursday. Compiled by Reuters, Dateline Baghdad, three car bombs exploded in quick succession. succession in a wholesale vegetable market killed 10 people, wounded 30 others in southern Dora district. In Baghdad, a car bomb targeted a police patrol, killing 4 people and wounding 10 in Sadoun Street. In Iskenderiya, police said they found the body of a man bound and shot dead in that town. In Baghdad, a car bomb killed 3 people and wounded 7 others in eastern Baghdad. In Mosul, a suicide bomber blew himself up near a police patrol, killing a civilian and wounding 4 policemen and 2 civilians. In Kafil, gunmen attacked a civilian car and wounded its driver. And in Mosul, a policeman was killed and another wounded when insurgents threw a bomb at a police checkpoint in Mosul. Also yesterday, in the reports that were given in the press, they talked about an American woman who was killed in Iraq. This was Andy Parhamovich, who I knew. She worked at Air America Radio in New York. She worked with Jamie Horn, who's the director of PR there. I've met Andy many times, we worked on news releases and things, and. She was 28 years old. She was a graduate of, she's from Perry, Ohio. I have a rather lengthy bio, more than I can read on the air. I'm sorry, but I just, she was working for she's a graduate of Marietta College, and she was, well, here it is. She developed her career in political communication with the Massachusetts Governor's Office and Department of Economic Development, Air America Radio, and most recently the International Republican Institute in Iraq, before joining the National Democratic Institute, which is who she was, Baghdad staff, in late 2006. This is who she was working with. And she was working to help Iraqi political party leaders and parliamentarians develop strategies to reach out to voters and constituents. She was a great person. And 28 years old, life lost. A tragedy. 1-866-440-8-4 and, Andy, good luck. And we're going to miss you. 1-866-440-8-4-6-6, our telephone number. Steve in Monterey, California. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Nice segue, Tom. when that Republican candidate trotted out his white male resentment regarding women's rights, I thought immediately of Maureen Dowd's "Are Men Necessary?" and the obvious answer: resentful white bigots are very unnecessary for anyone. Okay. And I'm surprised that you did not object to his racist implication that basketball players are somehow to be contrasted with college professors genetically.
Yeah, well, Steve, you're right, and there were probably 15 or 20 other little things that John dropped in there that I could have gone off on as well.
Right,
I mean, you have to pick your battles.
Minefield.
Yeah, you have to pick your battles. It's just, you get these conservatives on, but thank you for pointing it out. You've done good. I appreciate it. Good on you for calling. Mark in Florence, Oregon. Hey, Mark.
Morning to you, Tom.
Good morning.
And Tom, you are great, and you are always getting greater.
Well, thank you.
That's the way it is. Tom, you were speaking of, and by the way, my condolences to you about your friend. I know that you're touched about that, I can
tell.
Yeah,
well, especially to her family and all the people in New York who worked with her on a daily basis.
Obviously knew her very well.
Yeah.
And Tom, I wanted to mention to you a few things this morning about adult stem cells. I don't know if you heard anything about adult stem cells. There was a 3-hour interview done on another national show back on November 30th of 2006, just a few months ago. And the interview was done with a medical doctor who has done extensive research and actual treatment with adult stem cells. Adult stem cells, according to this medical doctor, have already been used to reverse and cure various types of cancers, brain tumors, spinal cord injuries, ALS.
Mark, I spent a while in India with a not just a medical doctor, but a professor at Harvard Medical School,
yes.
John Mack, who would tell you to your face as a medical doctor that people in the United States, thousands of people in the United States, have been abducted by aliens and operated on in spaceships just above the ground. Just because somebody's an MD doesn't mean that they're spot on.
Yes, I understand.
And John actually was John has since died, and John was a decent guy, and he really believed. He actually wrote a couple of books on this topic, and I'm agnostic on it. I don't have any idea,
yes.
But he compiled an enormous amount of information. But Mark, yes, adult stem cells are real. Yes, they can be therapeutic, and the vast majority of the evidence indicates that they got nothing close to embryonic stem cells, which, by the way, shouldn't be called embryonic stem cells. An embryo doesn't appear until about 2 weeks after conception. Prior to that, it's called a blastocyst. And prior to it being a blastocyst, it's called a zygote. And so, a fertilized egg is a zygote. An implanted zygote, once it starts forming multiple cells, becomes a blastocyst. And then the blastocyst doesn't become an ovum an embryo until about 14 days after conception. So if this is OMD in Springfield, Oregon, I think you wanted to speak to that as well.
You kind of answered it. It's kind of my feeling from what I'm understanding of it that you can't get stem cells from an embryo.
Well, I think
stem cells are non-differentiated.
That's
once
right.
It's an embryo, they're differentiated.
Yeah, that's you're absolutely right.
And you had that guy on. I'm hoping you'd ask him that, too, and clear up a little bit of that, too. And
yeah.
I keep hearing you say embryonic stem cell talk.
Well, here's the problem. You're absolutely right that it's a conservative frame. And try and get that past the media. I mean, if I were to talk about blastocystic stem cells or zygotic stem cells, people would go, what's he talking about? The fact of the matter is this one, at least on the framing level, is a war that I think we've lost. And frankly, that should provide us with an opportunity to get back to these discussions about at what stage do we, when and where and how what level of government intrusion do we want in our lives? And, let's get back to some of the debates that lead to some of the larger issues here. But, OMD, good point, and thank you very much for calling. Mike in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom. You were kind of hard on Mark earlier, and you dusted off your Constitution to inflict some psychic pain on him. You still have the Constitution handy?
I do.
Can you point to where the federal government has the right to intercede with the states and tell them how and when they may protect their own citizens, as in preventing abortion through a state law?
Well, the folks who say that abortion should be illegal suggest that it is in the preamble of the Constitution, where it says that we the people, in order to form more, establish justice, ensure domestic, provide for the common demands, promote the general welfare. Oh, actually, it's not there, is it? I was thinking of the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say anything about life in the preamble. Okay. You're right. It doesn't.
Yeah. So, if we truly want a federal system where the feds do not have all powers, then we have to respect the states who have total municipal police powers. None of those powers were given to the federal government.
In fact, it's the states who have most of the federal murder laws are very, very narrowly defined.
You have to murder a fed, or you have to be on federal property.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a state crime. This was the big deal in the Kennedy assassination. The feds illegally took his body.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if those people had known their Constitution, which unfortunately is one of my pet peeves, that most people they know their little pet portions of it, but they don't know it enough to defend it. And unfortunately, people like Mark, who swore an oath when he entered into the service, nobody taught him. Probably nobody taught him back when he's in school either what the Constitution means.
Well, and what's ironic is, as a member of the military, he swore an oath to defend the Constitution as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you all were talking about the president, and he was more than a little confused there. The president is the only federal officer who actually swears an oath to make sure that the laws of the nation are faithfully upheld. And he has admitted multiple times that he has done just the opposite. He has permitted wiretapping without warrants.
He hasn't just permitted it. He's encouraged it.
Yeah,
he
absolutely
created the program.
Yeah, he's impeached himself by his own words, and shame on both houses, both parties, that they don't take this man to task.
Well, that's my point, is that if enough of us call Congress and say, listen, we want you to ask Gonzalez and these guys, when you were doing your illegal warrantless wiretapping, were you listening in on Democrats? And I have a feeling that that question will be like dropping a small bomb on Congress. And I would just love to hear Alberto Gonzalez or one of these guys under oath say, can you say for sure, sir, that no partisan wiretapping took place, that there was nobody who was wiretapped who was involved in partisan politics, any Democrats or Republicans for that matter? And I'll bet they can't answer. 45 minutes past the hour.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you, far. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Roll call, Bush, Card, Fox, Roll, Fox, Ashcroft, Fox, Rumsfeld, Fox, Wolfowitz, Fox, Pearl, Fox, Cheney, O'Reilly, Hannity, Hume, Fox, Fox, Bennett, Crystal, Lim, Fox, Hastert, Gingrich, Lott, DeLay, Fox, 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 Fox,
chicken hogs indeed. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Listener-supported radio brought to you by you supporting our sponsors. Listen to your local stations for the advertisers and let them know that you're listening and patronize their products, as well as our national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, sacredgroundscoffee.com, saving the planet one cup at a time, all organic, fair trade. Small Dog Electronics, getting the latest iPods now at 1-800-511-MAX. The Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, and Purina One Natural Blends, the cat food that my cat Higgins eats, 866-380-MEOW. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Well, interesting goings-on in the Senate Judiciary Committee today, most of which I had to say was above my pay grade,
so
they're all lawyers.
We talked this morning. I believe we talked this morning, didn't we? It was you and I?
We did. Yeah. I know. It's a long day.
Yeah. Did my question get asked?
Not as far as I'm aware. Not so far. I was counting on Senator Kennedy to somehow ask it, but as far as I know, he didn't ask it. No, they were pretty obsessed with warrantless wiretapping.
Well, we should, for the benefit of our listeners, and for you, actually, for the first hour of the program, and we're going to get back to it in the next hour as well, along with other news of the day, this whole issue of warrantless wiretapping, I'm of the opinion that part of the reason why Bush didn't want judges looking over his shoulder is because they were wiretapping politicians. And my question was, will any of the Democratic politicians ask Gonzalez, were you, sir, wiretapping any politicians in the United States? And I think that that question would be a bombshell. And I'm waiting for some. I think it could be a Watergate moment. I think, and I'm just, hoping and praying that that question will get asked. But it didn't get asked.
Not as far as I'm aware. There was an interesting back and forth with Senator Spector when Senator Spector, who was fairly ticked off with him over a number of issues, asked him to come back tomorrow. And he said, I'll come back as soon as I can, Senator. He said, can you come back tomorrow? He said, I'll come as soon as I can. He said, tomorrow? Come back as soon as I can. So he said, tomorrow again. And, of course, Spector just kept hammering away at him. But Gonzalez never answered a single question with a yes or a no.
Wow. Was he under oath?
I believe so.
Yeah. That's probably why he didn't answer any questions with a yes or a no.
He just seems to be constitutionally incapable of doing it.
Right. The wonders of the perjury laws in the United States. Now, here's a bombshell in USA Today today. You know how the cons have beat up on Bill Clinton, saying that he did nothing about the USS Cole. And it wasn't until the 9/11 Commission report came out that we discovered that it was in January, after George Bush was selected as president by the Supreme Court and sworn in, that the CIA finally said for sure, the FBI and the CIA together said for sure, Osama bin Laden was responsible for the USS Cole. And then Bush did nothing about it for 9 months, didn't go after bin Laden. But the mythology is that Clinton didn't do anything about it because it happened in October while he was president. Now, here, this in USA Today, I'll just read this straight up. I'm just curious what kind of response is, what's happening on Capitol Hill as a result of this. Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's right-hand man, right? He was the Assistant Secretary of State, or Chief of Staff, excuse me, to Colin Powell, his right-hand man. He, on BBC last night, he said, and I quote, "An Iranian offer to help the United States stabilize Iraq and end its military support for Hezbollah and Hamas was turned down by U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney in 2003. He said, "We thought it was a very propitious moment." That's one of those words I think. Propitious? How do you say that word?
It's propitious.
Propitious. Thank you very much. A moment to strike the deal, Wilkerson said. But as soon as it got to the White House and as soon as it got to the vice president's office, the old mantra of "we don't talk to evil" reasserted itself. Say what? In 2003, Iran said, "We'll shut down Hezbollah, we'll shut down Hamas, and we'll help you with Iraq."
Oh my gosh! This story should be huge.
Well, it sure was on the BBC. I'm telling you, and it made USA Today today, but it wasn't on it wasn't the screaming headline on the front page. But that is
extraordinary. But that, I think that goes really, doesn't it, to a true believer?
Dick Cheney, you mean?
Yes, I think it does.
I don't think he was a true believer. I think he's a true manipulator. I don't think he had any interest in peace in the Middle East. I think when the Iranians came in, the Iranians, they held a candlelight vigil after 9/11 in memory of in solidarity with the United States in Tehran. Average Iranian is, most Iranians are very pro-American. And when they came in 2003 to Dick Cheney and said, we'll cut off military support for Hezbollah in southern Lebanon and Hamas in Palestine, and by the way, we'll also help you stabilize Iraq, Dick Cheney said, no thanks. I mean, the only conclusion I can come to is that Cheney wanted war. And that he wants the war to go on.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. Well, I realize as a reporter, you're not going to offer an opinion on that, but I'll just put it out there and say that this is a mind-boggling story. And so pass it along, eh?
you bet I will.
If you get a chance to ask anybody about it, I'd love to hear what they have to say. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-THOM. If you want to drop into our live chat room, you can go over to tomhartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there. I believe we have all the various misspellings available. And just click live chat up at the middle of the top of the page, and you can drop right in and hang out with some of the finest minds in the entire universe, certainly in cyberspace. We'll be back with more news of the day and your calls after the news here at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Michael J. Fox is going to be a guest at the State of the Union Address of Representative Jim Langevin. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Jim Langevin was accidentally shot as a child, and apparently the bullet hit his spine because he's been confined to a wheelchair for most of his adult life. And he and Michael J. Fox will be sitting in the audience listening to George W. Bush. And I hope Bush looks at him. Here's Jim Langevin, Congressman Jim Langevin. He's the Rhode Island representative speaking on the House floor.
I rise to express profound disappointment in the decision of the President to veto H.R. 810. This legislation passed with strong bipartisan support in both chambers of Congress.
HRH10, by the way, was stem cell research.
It enjoys the support of upwards of 70% of the American people. And most importantly, it offers hope and the promise of a cure to the millions of people who are living with the constant challenge and burdens of chronic disease and disability.
And he said, he asked why Bush had vetoed legislation that might allow people with his injury to walk again. So that, you know, that's Monday. Is it Monday is going to be the State of the Union? It's Tuesday. It's Monday or Tuesday next week. One of those 2 days. Anyhow, it's going to be next week. And in the meantime, as Judge Anna Diggs Taylor said, it was never the intent of the framers to give the president such unfettered control. This is talking about his NSA wiretapping, illegal warrantless wiretapping program, particularly where his actions blatantly disregard the parameters clearly enumerated in the Bill of Rights. There are no hereditary kings in America and no powers not created by the Constitution. So all inherent powers must derive from that Constitution. You recall Bush claiming that it was inherent powers that he had that allowed him to do whatever he damn well pleased. It's just mighty strange. It's just mighty strange. In fact, on some days, you think, I mean, it's I don't know, I guess it's time for an Alberto Gonzalez alert. Yes, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says federal judges are unqualified to make rulings affecting national security policy, ramping up his criticism on how they handle terrorism cases. This is from the New York Times. In remarks prepared for delivery today, yesterday, Gonzalez says judges generally should defer to the will of the president and Congress. Oh, really? Yeah, he says, this is incredible. He says, we want to determine whether he understands the inherent limits that make an unelected judiciary inferior to Congress or the president in making policy judgments. This is Gonzalez's quote. The inferior branch, the judiciary. My recollection was that we had three co-equal branches. I'm not sure what I missed here. Fourth grade civics, or maybe Mr. Gonzalez missed fourth grade civics. I don't know. Anyhow, Alberto Gonzalez. Alert for the day. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Dick in London, Ontario, Canada. Hey, Dick.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
As I was waiting, it's interesting how you brought up the, this isn't what I'm going to talk about, but you mentioned the fact that one of the reasons for the concern over the wiretapping is that they would be, that Bush could potentially bug other politicians. I can't believe all the noise that's gone on about this issue when that really is the key. You're the first guy I've ever heard to say that.
Well, imagine if a Democrat, if Bill Clinton had been caught doing illegal wiretapping and tried to claim that it was that he was trying to do it to get terrorists, the first thing the Republicans would do would rush onto the floor of the House and Senate and say, he's been bugging our offices.
Well, yeah, and so what happens is if they do bug somebody and they get caught, they say it's our national security.
Right.
And what I can't believe, all the noise that's gone on about it, and you're the first guy who's ever said that. I don't mean to blow smoke up your butt, but anyway. My point is this, Tom.
Smoke, appreciate it.
No.
But, I mean, you know, Bush is basically doing this. He's saying the same thing that Nixon is.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
But why,
boom.
Why hasn't people picked up on that? That really is the core. It's not a question of them bugging you and me or...
There's a bigger question, Dick. It's not why haven't the American people picked up on
media.
It. It's why hasn't the American media picked up on it. Why has not one of the talking head commentators brought this up? I wrote an op-ed piece about this 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I've talked about this on this program multiple times. Nobody else is talking about it. We need a concerted, national effort to get this out there. I'm encouraging people to call their member of Congress at 866, toll free, 866-220-0044. 220-0044. 866 area code. Call your member of Congress. Call your senators, both of your senators and your member of Congress. And Dick, you could even call from Canada and just say, hey, I'm a concerned citizen of the world, unless you're an American living in Canada.
I'm a dual citizen.
Okay. And say, you know, I want to know if the Bush administration, if part of the Bush administration's illegal wiretapping program was for partisan purposes. Were they listening in on Democrats? We know for a fact that Orrin Hatch, out of Orrin Hatch's office, the Republican Party, had broken into the computers of at least six six members, Democratic members of the United States Senate, and was monitoring their email for over a year. We know that for a fact. It was reported in the New York Times. Orrin Hatch confessed to it and fired the staffer who was involved. There's never been an investigation. If they've done that, what were they doing with the telephone calls?
Well, I think what it is that these media people, they just want to make noise. They just want to fill the air with noise.
No, I think that they're afraid of the administration.
Oh, well.
I think that they're sucking up to this administration. You've got a bunch of people in the media who are part of the same power structure that this administration is, and they don't want to take on George W. Bush. They don't, and you know, they just don't want to go there.
Well,
Dick, I got to move along, but I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Good talking with you, Alexander in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Alexander.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Before anything, I want to thank you for all of those books about ADHD that you have written.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm an adult with ADHD, and I didn't know that you have written so many books about the subject.
Well, welcome to our tribe.
Regarding the president, I mean, the president is probably holding something over these people's head already. Then that's why they're not moving along with the investigations that I was expecting that they were going to, you know, do as soon as they got into Congress.
And you think that the president is blackmailing the Democrats? Is that the essence of what you're saying?
Oh, that's probably it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I had so many hopes that as soon as these guys got into office and they started some hearings, you know, and they were going to do something, you know, to take care of the situation. But it looks to me like they're holding something over their heads already.
Yeah, you do have to wonder sometimes when the Democrats start behaving like wusses. You know, this is not genetic. This is not something that they learned at their mother's knee. This is, you know, Democrats have known how to play hardball politics in this country in the past. You know, what's going on? On the other hand, well, you know, I don't know. But I am hoping that enough of us will speak out and ask the Democrats to seriously investigate the crimes of the Bush administration. Because I absolutely believe that a serious investigation is going to lead right back to impeachable offenses. Alexander, thank you for the call. Number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, number 12.
No, man, you got me right in the middle of a bite. I'm eating lunch.
Okay, you want me to put you on hold and come back?
No. I've been on hold for too long.
Okay, hey, what's up?
About an hour ago, whenever I was on hold, either you or one of your callers or guests said that, how much freedom are you willing to give up? And I'm just going to have to say, because I listen to all the shows, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is meant to put government, period, on a short leash. That means the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or whatever party happens to be in existence or in power and control. It's not like you have, like, you know, you bring back the three houses, you bring back the Democrats to all branches of government, and you're going to have, like, you know, some utopia. I don't want either one of them affecting my life as much as possible.
Why are they?
I'm pro-Constitution, pro-Bill of Rights, and anti-Democrat Republican. They're a necessary evil, but I don't want, like, you know, somebody like, I don't know, MoveOn.org supporters and the backers, George Soros, having an effect on my life any more than I want some right-wing group having an effect on my life through the Republican branch or the Democratic branch. And I just want to make that point.
Yeah, well, point made. Are you expecting me to disagree with you?
No, but the thing is, it's like, you know, the thing was, during the election, was oversight, because we have three branches of government controlled by the Republicans. I think you'd have just as much garbage going on if you had the three branches of government controlled by the Democrats. I mean, the reason why...
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's the parties. I'm not disagreeing with you, number 12. I don't think it's the parties. It is important, I think, that there be some adversarialness in all of this. But what we're suffering under right now is 26 years of the Republican Party, by and large, the conservatives, deconstructing the American middle class. And now 6 years of being terrorized by these guys. 16 minutes past the hour.
Now hush. Don't say a word.
I just called you.
It's enough to know
to say
my words are being heard. And we're fighting freedom here at home. So we don't have to fight it over there.
Now my own sweet Marie never listens to me, not my brother or even my mama. Osama.
Welcome back. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 22 minutes past the hour. There's some great music coming. You know, protest always evokes good music. Tough times, I mean, whether it's economic tough times or whether it's war tough times, whether it was the Vietnam War or whether it was the Great Depression, just some great, tragically, some great music that comes out of it. Welcome back. I mentioned, you know, going into the break, that we are suffering from two things: 26 years of the economic deconstruction of the American middle class and 6 years of being terrorized. And I just want to riff on this just a little bit and then come back to your phone calls here. An interesting little piece of news here coming out of China today. But if you look at the history of the United States, there have been two times when we had a strong middle class. The first, and in fact, let me back up a little bit even from that. A middle class is not a normal thing. Under normal economic theory, a middle class should not emerge. At least a large middle class should not emerge. Under normal laissez-faire economics, and if you look at the 7,000-year history of what we call Western civilization, and also look at other civilizations, the Incans, the Mayas, the Eastern civilizations, China, the Chinese Empire, any of these laissez-faire economies, what you find is that what is normal is for there to be a very small, very powerful, very wealthy elite ruling class that controls, that is less than 1% of the population and typically controls between 70 and 90% of all the wealth. A very small middle class, which are the mercantilists and the experts, literally the shopkeepers, literally the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker, and, you know, the store owners, and the experts, the physician, the stonemason, the artisans, they make up a very small middle class. And then there's a very large class of the working poor. That's what's normal in economies. That's what Charles Dickens wrote about in England in virtually all of his writings. His father was thrown in a debtor's prison. He knew this firsthand. A Christmas Carol is a story of Scrooge and Marley Incorporated. Scrooge wasn't even part of the wealthy ruling class. He was the middle class. This was a small businessman who had one employee. And Bob Cratchit was part of that huge class of the working poor. And may I please have the health care for my son, Tiny Tim? No, you can't. It'll cost me an extra pence. And so there have been only two times in the United States that we've really had a large and strong middle class. In the 1770s, as a result of the rules or the laws of economics being violated by the fact that there was a lot of free land and we had slavery. Both of these things, largely though the free land, because you had a middle class emerge in the North where slavery was illegal in many states. The free land, I say free in quotes, right? I mean, obviously we stole it from the Indians, we killed people for it, but nonetheless, there it was, all these resources. The resource to population ratio was higher, and so a middle class emerged. That middle class pretty much vanished by the 1830s. We had a series of great depressions and recessions. The one in 1856 that spawned the Republican Party and that many argue led to the Civil War, the panics of the 1880s, the 1890s, the Great Panic of 1896 or 1898, as I recall. In 1900, the average income of the average working family in the United States was $9,700 a year in today's dollars. So from 1820 or 1830, as population reached the point where, you know, we'd used up pretty much all the free land, from the 1830s until the 1930s, there wasn't much of a middle class in the United States outside of family farmers. That was basically all the middle class we had. And then the Great Depression, I mean, you know, really wiped us out. And Franklin Roosevelt came along and said, okay, a middle class is important to democracy. We need a middle class. we're going to have to change the rules of economics. And he changed the rules of laissez-faire economics and said, we're going to allow unionization, and we're going to have a social security system for old age, and we're going to have a minimum wage. And by changing the laws of economics, he brought about the strongest middle class the world had ever seen in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. And then Reagan came along and said, hey, wait a minute. These people have too much time on their hands. They're protesting because the middle class in the 1970s did the same thing that the middle class in the 1770s did. They stood up to power. In the 1770s, we stood up to the King of England and the East India Company. In the 1970s, we stood up to a president who was driving us to a war in Vietnam and corporate power right across the board. And so Reagan came in and said, let's wipe out the middle class. And they've been doing it now for 26 years. And we're a little more pacified. 27 minutes past the hour.
5 to 1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here gets out alive now. You give yours, baby. I'll give mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try.
There you go. We've got the guns, but we got the numbers, right? Welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Tom Hartman with you. 34 minutes past the hour. I just want to wrap this point up because it's a point that I think is really important and is so often missed in the kind of rant culture that we have that skips over just skims over the surface and doesn't look a little deeper into the pond or look at the roots or whatever metaphor you want to use. And that is that the conservatives who in the 1770s were looking at instability in the United States and were very alarmed about it. Conservatives like, for example, Ben Franklin's grandson, from whom he was estranged as a consequence, that he went back to England. Conservatives like Sir Edmund Burke, who was in England. Conservatives in the United States, most of whose names we don't know now because they left before, during, or immediately after the Revolutionary War, and so they're not typically part of American history. But they represented at least a third of the population of what we now call the American colonies, and arguably more. That the conservatives of that day looked at the wildness that was going on, at the Boston Massacre, which everybody pretty much knew we provoked the British into shooting at us. It was basically a street brawl. There was a couple of British soldiers there, and they got taunted, and one of them shot. In fact, John Adams defended in court as a lawyer. John Adams, the guy who became second president of the United States, defended the lieutenant who was in charge of that little group of British soldiers who shot that kid in the Boston Massacre. I mean, and this is one of the more conservative, the founders. In any case, the conservatives back then looked at this wildness that was going on and said, wait a minute, this isn't a good thing. And the liberals of the day, the small d Democrats of the day, the progressives of the day, they said, no, this is a good thing. This instability is healthy. This is the birthing of something new. Many of them thought they were seeing the same thing during the French Revolution. Thomas Jefferson, during the French Revolution, wrote a note to, as I recall, it was to his friend Mr. Dumas, although I may well be wrong on my memory on this, and said, you know, sometimes the tree of liberty needs to be watered by the blood of patriots. Now, the French Revolution arguably was not a good thing. Maximilian Robespierre and the terrors that followed. I mean, Tom Paine went over there. He thought, hey, this is cool. This is great. The French are going to do the same thing we did. They're going to throw off a king, and this will be the first democracy on the European continent. And by the time he got there, the terrors were beginning, and they threw his butt in jail and sentenced him to death. It was only because either Madison or Monroe, one or the other, petitioned the French repeatedly that Thomas Paine even got let out of jail and came back to the United States where he died. But the point is that the conservatives back then, they valued stability. And they saw the instability of people standing up against the East India Company, of people standing up against the British King, of people demanding rights, and right across the board. I mean, there was an abolition movement then, there was a women's rights movement then. They saw all of that as unhealthy. And the same thing happened in the 1970s. And you will hear conservatives to this day. We had D'Souza on the program 2 days ago. And he just wrote a book about this. You know, how the left is responsible for 9/11. Why? Because all the traditional societies of the world look at us and go, oh, my God. Well, at a certain level, he's right. Conservatives look at the social instability that comes along with democracy and liberty and freedom. And they look at that essential instability with horror. Oh, my God, in the 1970s. Oh, my God, women are burning their bras. People are having sex outside of marriage. They're even questioning the canons of marriage. They want to do away with laws that ban interracial marriage. African Americans are saying, hey, what about us? We thought that we were part of America. I thought the Civil War settled this. Let's do away with this apartheid stuff. This segregation stuff. Gays saying, hey, we're part of the human family too. And the conservatives looked at this, and young people saying, you know, hell no, we won't go. Not to your war, no. And the conservatives looked at this and said, whoa. This is a society leading toward meltdown. They really believed it. When Ronald Reagan didn't shut down the University of California system, when he eliminated the possibility of basically anybody who had the grades being able to go to college in California for free, for all practical purposes, did away with nearly free college education in California. He was asked later why, and he said, why should I pay my tax dollars to somebody, I'm paraphrasing, but it was close to this, why should I pay my tax dollars so somebody can protest at college something that I disagree with? Yeah, referring to the Vietnam War protesters. And these guys figured out, and this isn't some kind of weird conspiracy theory, you can read their own writings about it. Go back and read William F. Buckley. Go back and read Russell Kirk. I mean, this stuff, they were writing this stuff in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. This is no secret. The conservatives sat around and they said, these people, this middle class, this American middle class, these union workers, have the security of a pension. They have the security of full health insurance. They have the security that they can't get fired without their union raising hell about it. Their kids are socially mobile. It's not just going to be a small group of the old boy network. The kids who go to Andover and whose parents get them into Yale and Harvard on the affirmative action program for old white guys like George W. And the conservatives looked at this and said, you know, this middle class is too unstable. We can't have this. And so you have, as you know, as I quote this in my book, Screwed, Alan Greenspan in the Wall Street Journal in 1997, saying that part of his job as chairman of the Fed was every time the economy got going strong enough that enough jobs were being created, that there was demand for workers, companies looking to hire people, and there were fewer workers than there were jobs, thus driving up the price of labor, what Greenspan refers to as wage inflation, he would increase interest rates to slow down the economy so that there wouldn't be so much demand for labor so that wages would go back down again. The very simple relationship between interest rates, between the Fed raising interest rates and wages going down. Or lowering interest rates and wages going up. And as Alan Greenspan said, part of his job is to maintain a certain minimum level of worker insecurity. This is what the cons have been about since 1981 when Ronald Reagan and the great conservative revolution began. And it's been nonstop. Bill Clinton and NAFTA and GATT and the WTO and the whole thing, I mean, it's just been nonstop. Clinton did a lot of really good things. I'm not, you know, here to take him apart, but his trade policies just played right into it. And so it's ultimately about stability. You have these conservatives who really, in their heart of hearts, and one of the reasons I try to get them on this program so often is so that you can get this, that these are not deluded people and these are not liars. These are people who really and truly believe in their heart of hearts that they're doing the best thing for a country that they love too, which is making sure that it's stable. And if you've got a large class of the working poor, and you've got a strong class of a wealthy elite and powerful institutions, you have a stable country. Leo Strauss looked at the United States in the 1950s and the 1960s and said, oh my God, we've got to do something about this. This is wrong. You know, we just can't have this going on. As did Mr. Kitab. I forget his first name. And he was just a few hundred miles away. He was in Golden, Colorado. And he went back to Egypt and founded the the Muslim Brotherhood, which became Al-Qaeda. And Leo Strauss founded the neocons. And now we've got these two groups who are both saying the same thing. Holy cow, a middle class is a terrible thing. It leads to social instability. We can't have it. They're both saying the same thing. And we're in the crossfire, metaphorically speaking. So anyhow, I wanted to lay that out get it out and nail it down, lest I be misunderstood. Please don't let me be misunderstood. What's the old song? And we'll come back in just a few minutes with your phone calls on this and to wrap up the program here today. And sorry for the long and hopefully not too didactic rant, but from time to time, I think it's important to revisit the fundamentals. And that's really the fundamental, that underneath it all, when you're talking politics, underneath it all, always, even war and peace, underneath it all, always, is economics. 45 minutes past the hour, 866-440-8466, TomHartmann.com if you want to drop into our chat room. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative, the Tom Hartmann radio program. That's me. Welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Apparently, in these Purina One ads I'm reading actually live during the first hour while they move around during the program. And apparently I gave out the wrong phone number because Paul came in and said that he got a call from somebody who's gotten some calls, and it was apparently the wrong number. So let me just tell you. This is Purina One Natural Blends is the cat food that I'm feeding Higgins, and their phone number, if you're interested, and this is not like an added ad for which I'm being paid or anything. I don't endorse things I don't actually use. It's great stuff. The phone number is 866-380-MEOW. 866-380-MEOW. And I apparently I said it wrong before. So my apologies to whoever's getting those calls and to you if you tried to call. And next Thursday and Friday, just a reminder, I'll be doing Radio Row at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. And Thursday night, 6 p.m., press party at the Mayflower Hotel. I'll be speaking on my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And, of course, Saturday is the big march on Washington, D.C. 1-866-440-8466. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to wrap up what you were talking about with the founders, the conservatives, and the liberals. And over the past month, I was over at townhall.com, and they actually, in their welcome letter when you sign up, they have a quote from conservative Edmund Burke. So that's, they still praise Edmund Burke.
Oh, sure. And now just for our listeners who don't know who Town Hall is or Edmund Burke, townhall.com is William F. Buckley's site. And Sir Edmund Burke is the guy, the conservative thinker, who so enraged Tom Payne, that he wrote Rights of Man as a rebuttal to Burke.
Right.
Burke was the one who said, it does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in a profession as servile as that of candle maker or hairdresser, but it does society considerable violence if such a man is allowed to participate in governance by voting or running for public office.
Yeah, and also Edmund Burke had Tom Paine convicted for sedition and treason because Edmund Burke, like you say, he defended monarchy and aristocracy, and he didn't like Tom Paine's debate, Rights of Man, which was defending democracy and the will of the people and all of that. And they, till this day, they love Edmund Burke.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wanted to just wrap that up because it isn't all didactic and esoteric. It is, to this day, this debate between liberals and conservatives and Rights of Man or Thomas Paine, these guys think he's a communist.
He's, and in fact, oddly enough, in Rights of Man, Thomas Paine laid out Social Security, progressive income tax, national health care program, minimum wage. Actually, back at those in that time in England, they had maximum wage laws. You couldn't pay people over a certain amount. And Paine said, no, it should be a minimum wage law. I mean, he laid out basically Franklin Roosevelt's progressive agenda in 1781, I think he wrote Rights of Man, or 1780. Whatever the year was. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that they try to, because Edmund Burke supported the American Revolution, so these guys over on these sites, they use all this gobbledygook, you know, sophistry to confuse everybody.
Right, but Burke was supporting the American Revolution on the conservative side. He was supporting the John Adams, Alexander Hamilton faction of the American Revolution, who thought that America should be recreated as an image of England, only instead of having a hereditary monarchy, we should have a meritocracy.
Exactly. Thank you. And that's why when you try to bring this up, they try to do all this jujitsu and confuse the issue.
I know. It's
basically
amazing stuff.
Tom Paine is the liberal who defended democracy, and this guy, Edmund Burke, he had him convicted of sedition.
Yep, there you go. Tom, thank you very much. It's always great to hear from you. Craig in Napa, California. Hey, Craig.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a crazy idea for you. I was thinking about this 9/11 thing and how Bush and Cheney had to hold hands and, you know, when they went before the 9/11 commission.
Oh, yeah, and they wouldn't testify under oath, and the ground rules were that whenever Bush is talking, Cheney can't be required to drink water.
Right.
I'm joking about that.
We've got a whole, all these conspiracy theories. I'm wondering, we've spent a god-awful amount of money on our Pentagon and our defense, and here comes 9/11, and bam, 3,000 Americans are killed by a handful of wackos. And basically, what we found out, and this is something I've never heard anybody talk about, is that we are naked. They were completely unable to stop this attack.
Well, we are, Craig, and we always have been, and we always will be, ultimately. Our best defense against terrorism, in quotes, is not earning the hatred and enmity of other people around the world. Osama bin Laden made it very clear. He wasn't attacking us because, we allow birth control. He was attacking us because we have soldiers on Saudi soil.
Exactly. And now, this whole thing, what really kills me is when they come out and they go, they hate us for our freedom.
Yeah, no, it's absolute nonsense. They hate us for our foreign policy. Craig, thank you. Point well made. Gary in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Gary.
Well, it doesn't look like we have much time, but I wanted to take issue with your some of your fundamentals of how we got a middle class. I think we got it through the union movement.
That's my point.
Yes.
And it started in the 1880s, but it wasn't, it wasn't until 1935 with the passage of the Wagner Act that the union movement was able to really take hold in the United States. But, yeah, the Wobblies, Joe Hill, the whole thing. Yeah, you're right.
But Roosevelt didn't have anything to do with the Wagner Act, really.
He pushed it through Congress.
No, Francis Perkins, who wrote a book, The Roosevelt I Knew, who was the Secretary of Labor under her, said he didn't take any part in it.
Oh, that's interesting. Gary, I have that book at home. I'll have to go look it up. Thank you very much for the heads up on that. That's interesting. You learn something new. Coming up tomorrow, brunch with Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, here taking your calls. No suck-up politician interviews here. Just put them on the air and let you talk to them. And I'll be challenging conservative Miriam Grossman on her announcement that a Nancy Pelosi-led House will mean physical and emotional destruction of young women. Say what? Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're in.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.